Good morning. Welcome to the Stissman's Home and Garden Show. We want to hear from you today when it comes to your lawn and garden. If you've got a question, give us a call. 316-869-1330. 869-1330, the number to call, area code 316. I'm Dave Wilson. Jason French is here from Stutzman's to answer your lawn and garden questions. Good morning, Jason.
Hey, good morning.
It's nice to wake up and see we had a little bit of moisture overnight, right?
A little bit. Definitely hoping for more, and it sounds like there's a good chance of it. So, yeah, we need some of those April showers.
Absolutely. Looks like you've got another busy weekend going on there at the garden centers with a sale on flats right now, right?
Yeah, our annual flower sale. It's the six-pack flat sale, and it is a mix-and-match kind of deal, but six-packs, so 36 plants, $17.99. Pretty good deal. Works out, about 50 cents a plant, and lots of different varieties to choose from.
All right, that's going on there at Stutzman's. And let's talk about a special event you've got coming up this Thursday. It's your annual party on the patio. What kind of activities are planned?
You know, that's a fun event we've done for quite a few years. It's our spring event where we are open late and have some extended hours. So we'll be open until 8 o'clock on Thursday for party on the patio. But we'll have some different guests and some local businesses stopping in. I think Ben has got some pulled pork ready to go in the smoker for some little sliders for some refreshments that way. And then we will have Mike DeRee from Ball Seed Company, which is one of the largest plant distributors in the world, actually. He's our local rep for them. He's going to come and talk to us about some new varieties or some things a lot of people may not think or know about in some of the new kinds of plants out. So that's always fun to get some education that way. And then I'll be doing some planting demonstrations, some talks about some different things. And we are debuting something totally new in the plant world, a glow-in-the-dark petunia. So that'll be something we'll be talking about and have available Thursday as well. Completely new genetic, completely new item, but white petunia. And then as it gets dark, the flower and the new bud glow in the dark.
I was going to ask you about those because you've got a video about it on the Stutzman's Facebook page. So if you'd like to see what these petunias look like, the glow-in-the-dark petunias, you can go to the Facebook page and watch this video. They look fascinating.
Yeah, totally new thing. It's called Firefly Petunia, and they originally tried to use the material, I think, that fireflies use to glow in the dark, and that didn't work as well in the plant, so they found basically a type of mushroom that has that glow-in-the-dark bioluminescence and have put that into the petunia, so as they produce. Well, all of the plant glows, but you really don't see much in the foliage because it's so dense. But the flower is where you're really going to notice it, and it has that greeny-white glow-in-the-dark color to it. So something totally new, something totally different. So that'll be really fun to show and talk to people about as well on Thursday.
Yeah, the glow-in-the-dark petunia, part of the party on the patio. It's happening Thursday, 5 to 8 in the evening there at Pleasant View. Get all the info on the Stutzman's Facebook page. If you've got a question about your lawn or garden today, the number to call, 316-869-1330. That's 316-869-1330. You can also send your question to the KNSS Facebook page this morning as well. Let's talk about vegetables, Jason. What can we be doing right now to make sure we have a good vegetable garden this season?
Well, a couple of things, you know, and we're getting into pretty heavy tomato planting. Peppers will be coming along soon, and another week or 10 days we'll start thinking cucumbers and squashes and things when we warm up just a little bit more. But ahead of time, some things that we can do, and this can be done in conjunction with planting too, or you know, if you already have some things planted, you could do surface application as well. But you know, for tomatoes, I really like to mix some gypsum in with my soil. And particularly if I'm growing in a container, that adding that gypsum to that container will help provide a lot of calcium. And what happens, and it usually happens more at the beginning of the season than later, but tomatoes tend to get, it's called blossom end rot, and it's this kind of sunken dark spot on the bottom of the tomato itself. And, you know, all of a sudden there's one ripening and you go to pick it and the bottom third of it's kind of black and sunken. Well, that's lack of calcium available to that plant right then. And kind of like calcium makes strong bones in people, it makes strong cell walls in plants. And, you know, that bottom part of that tomato is the oldest part. It kind of breaks down first and suffers from that. So if we add some gypsum in there, gypsum is a good source of calcium. It's kind of a calcium and sulfur product that will help with that. So I would definitely work some of that in. It also helps with tomatoes, and sometimes melons can have that, or peppers, and sometimes melons can have that issue as well. Peppers, you'll see a little tan kind of water-soaked tip to the bottom of the pepper, and that's a sign of the blossom end rot on them. I also like to incorporate a little bit of fertilizer with everything. And for our vegetables, a little bit different fertilizer than some of our flowers and things. A little bit lower numbers on most of the vegetables. And I really like to use a granular fertilizer as much as possible with my vegetables. They provide a more even, slower release of that fertilizer, and that's what we want with vegetables, is that even continuous growth, you know, fruit production and all. And so that is nice, and that can be worked into the soil a little bit ahead of time or done with planting. But you know, if we get both of those things in there, we should be set to have a pretty good crop in our garden this year.
Some good things there to know about your vegetable garden, and I'm making it great this season. Debbie called. She didn't want to go on the air, Jason, but she is asking for a recommendation about a weed killer that is safe to use where kids and pets play in the yard.
Well, it's a little bit of a challenge as far as things that are going to do much for your existing weeds. But what I would do, and my kids are grown now, but I had younger kids and I have pets all the time. And so, you know, if you read the directions and all, what you're going to want to do is make sure pets and people are off of that grass, and then you're going to want to apply it. You know, I like the Weed Beater Ultra. It works very well. But then you're going to want to let that completely dry. And then once it's dried, it's fairly well bonded onto that foliage and pretty well stays there. But keeping people off of it while it's still wet is going to be pretty important on that. There aren't a whole lot of really good natural killers that don't kill the grass and everything too. I mean, there are ones like horticultural vinegar and some of those that do a very good job killing, but they kill whatever it's going to get on. And, you know, I'm assuming this is a lawn where we want the grass. So, you know, I would just follow those guidelines. Be sure and do a very good application when you apply it. That way you're less likely to have to repeat those things. But and you would want to wait probably 24 hours before you watered it in. That way those leaves and things have a chance to absorb all that. And sometimes we have to apply like an insecticide to the lawn. Maybe we've got a grub problem, or we want to get rid of fleas and ticks, and in some of those areas where our pets are. And kind of a similar thing, we want them off the area while we put that product on. And then most of our insecticides need to be watered in. So put it on, let it get watered in, let it get dry, and then we can feel pretty good about being on it again.
All right, Debbie, thank you so much for your question this morning. While we're talking about pets and yards, Jason, I know we've got at least one fairly large area where the pets have worn down the grass. It's becoming a bare spot. When it comes to replacing that, is it better to put new grass seed down or put sod down, or does it matter?
Some of it's up to the individual, and some of it is how torn up it is. My lot is like an acre, but I have this backyard that's, you know, fenced in where the dogs are, and have a pretty decent lawn there. And that's an area, I mean, I usually do some seeding every year to keep it full, but I do have some areas like on one corner of the patio. When you open the door, they run out and they run right over the same spot, and they come that way when they come in, and it gets pretty hard and bare. And, you know, one of the things, whether we're seeding or putting some sod down over those spots, we want to get something like a potato fork, a pitchfork kind of thing, and we want to put it down in the soil, and we want to pop up and loosen up that top couple of inches. That continuous traffic really packs that down, and water and air and all can't get in and out very well, and that's part of the struggle with the grass. Some of it's the physical, you know, smashing it down, but some of it, that ground gets so hard that even when you water, you know, it only waters that top little bit. So loosening all of that up and getting it ready. If you're going to put sod down, you know, you're probably going to, well, either way, you're going to have to keep them off of that area for a while till it establishes, and probably not quite as long as seed. Seed will take a little bit longer, but seed is quite a bit cheaper, and a lot of times it's, you know, easier just to seed that spot occasionally to keep it full and keep it going. One other thing I might mention, not from necessarily the physical damage of the pets running around, but sometimes where they go to the bathroom on the grass, you'll get these yellow spots, and then, you know, some of them brown and die out, some of them green back up, but that's another really good use of gypsum. Mm. And a lot of times I just keep a little bag or a little bucket there, and if you see some of those spots starting, just take a handful of that and apply it liberally to that area, and it has the ability also to neutralize a lot of the salts and things from like the urine, and so that grass would be able to recover a lot faster. I usually do a couple of treatments on that little lawn just with gypsum over the whole thing, just to keep everything happy and going. But it's nice to have some of that around if you get some of those yellow spots, to be able to get that grass to grow back as opposed to burning and dying.
Yeah, I've never heard that about gypsum. I'm going to have to get some now and keep little bags around to take care of those spots.
So, yeah, pretty easy. It's a dry, powdery granular. Like I said, it's a mineral from the earth. So, I mean, there's no pesticide, herbicide, or anything involved with it like that. But I just have like a little small 3-gallon bucket and just pour the bag in there, and I could just take a handful and hit those spots as that happens.
Very nice. You're listening this morning to the Stutzman's Home and Garden Show. If you have a question about your lawn or garden, the number is 316-869-1330. That's 316-869-1330. You can also send your question to the KNSS Facebook page today as well. Let's talk about shade trees, Jason. We're going to need, of course, these when it gets a lot warmer. What should we consider when trying to choose the best one for our home?
You know, shade trees are, a lot of people don't realize how valuable they are until all of a sudden you don't have one. You know, the amount of cooling that's provided, you know, one, if we're outside in the shade, but just to the house and the area itself, blocking some of that sun really can reduce a lot of indoor heating and things as well. And so, you know, when you think of shade trees, these are going to be usually your larger trees, you know, 30 plus feet tall. So some of the things to think about, you know, one is how big is that the canopy, the top leafy part, going to be when that tree is grown. You know, some of them are very broad. Maybe if it's, you know, 30, 40 feet across at the top, we don't want to plant it 10 feet away from the house, because then you're going to have, you know, half of the canopy of this tree is going to actually be over the house, and, you know, you have a lot of that too close. So we want to be sure to set them out far enough away from the house, you know, and think about also not right up next to the sidewalk or the driveway. One, it gets kind of hot and it's kind of a hard growing space, but also as some of those trees get bigger, you could have some root issue if they're right next to it. So, and before you plant one, look up, make sure we don't have a power line or something that isn't a problem today, but in 10 years when that tree's big would be an issue. So, you know, getting the right site for it. And then, you know, there are some trees I think tend to do a little bit better in Kansas for those larger shade trees. A couple of the red oaks do very well. The northern red oak, the Schumard oak, both of those do pretty well. And you know, while they're young, neither one of those is what I would call slow growing. People think oaks are really slow. Generally, that is once they become more mature, they don't add on very much growth at a time. But like the Schumard oak I had, as it grows and matures, I mean, it was growing 3 or 4 feet a year, and it's pretty big now. It's probably 20 years old that I've had it now, but, you know, pretty quickly got to a good sized tree and do pretty well with our soils. I would avoid pin oaks if we're in Kansas. They like acidy soils like you would find east of the Mississippi River, and so sometimes they struggle with yellowness, things like that. But those are a really good tree. Some of the honey locust are really nice, small leaf to them, but a nice big canopy and make a pretty nice yard tree. If you don't have real heavy soils, they don't necessarily like real clay soils, but several of the red maples make really nice shade trees as well. You know, the autumn blaze grows fairly quickly as well. So, you know, there's some different choices in some of those. A few things I would avoid is the silver maple. Well, it is one of the fastest growing trees you could plant. It is also one of the weakest wood. It has very light, not dense, heavy wood, and wind and ice and things like that, they tend to break up pretty badly. So they're not always best tree to have, you know, right close to the property there. So I would kind of avoid that one. You know, there's a few others that have some issues if they're not well taken care of. Ash are a beautiful tree, but if they get too stressed out and all, they can have some borer issues and things. But generally, they're a pretty nice big tree as well. So there's several things to think about and choose from when picking a shade tree.
All right, a lot of good information right there about picking a shade tree here on the Stutzman's Home and Garden Show, where you can call with your question, 316-869-1330, 316-869-1330. We're going to get an update on what's going on this weekend at Stutzman's right now from Mr. Ben Miller.
Good morning, everyone. Hi, this is Ben Miller. Thanks for listening to today's broadcast of the Stutzman's Home and Garden Show. More with Jason coming up. As we kick off spring 2025 season, we're excited to have our gardens look amazing. The days are getting longer and the temperatures are getting warmer, and it's a great time to start planting flowers. It's time for a full flat sale at Stutzman's. Mixer match six packs for only $17.99. That's 36 plants for only $17.99. Choose from many of your favorites, begonias, coleus, impatiens, gazanias, salvia, petunias, and the most heat-loving of all, vinca, all that perform very well in our Kansas climate. Again, this is Ben Miller. Have a great day. Enjoy this beautiful time of year, and we hope to see you soon at one of our 12 garden centers. You can always find out more at our Facebook page or Stutzman's.com. Now back to Jason and the Home and Garden Show, brought to you by Stutzman's Greenhouse and Garden Centers. Save big with their full flat sale.
At Stutzman's Greenhouse, everything's green with us.
And this is the Stutzman's Home and Garden Show. I'm Dave Wilson, Jason French here as well from Stutzman's to answer your lawn and garden questions at 316-869-1330. Also, you can send your question to the KNSS Facebook page like Chad has done. And Jason, he's asking, how can we keep our annuals thriving in a hanging basket?
That is sometimes a little bit of a challenge because we have them, one, they're up in the air, so they get heat and all on all sides of the plant. And then frequently in Kansas, we are not the calmest, so you have some wind to deal with as well. But there are some things that really can help with that. One, if it's going to be one of those red flag wind days, I would just take my baskets down and set them down. They're going to handle that a lot better. But some things to remember with our baskets, as that plant gets bigger, they dry out quite a bit being up in the air like that. And so when we're hot, most days they're going to need a good drink to them to keep that soil nice and moist. One of the other things that's really important, and it's important in all containers, but hanging basket where the container's a little bit smaller and we are watering a lot, fertilizing is going to be really, really important. Once a week or so, take one of like the Stutzman's all-purpose or, another type that you mix with water and use that for your watering that time so that they get a good fertilizing. That regular water that they need tends to push a lot of those nutrients out, so we need to feed them a little bit more to keep them looking their best. And then one of the other things, and it's one of the hardest things to convince people that they need to do, but once I get them to do it, they understand, and it's a much better plant. If you have, and it's particularly with petunias, as they get really long in that plant, one, they use so much water, but they get kind of stringy and straggly and really whip around in the wind. If we go through and occasionally give just a little bit of a haircut to that plant, maybe, towards the bottom of the pot, kind of level it off. And if you have some branches over the top, give them a little bit of trim. That really encourages that to get fuller and thicker in that area. But you also get lots of new shoots that will continue to have fresh new flowers on them. And so occasional haircut grooming is one of the most important things we can do for a lot of our hanging baskets.
All right, Chad, thank you so much for your question this morning. How often should we fertilize container plants, Jason?
If we have a nice big pot sitting on the ground, I would say every week to every other week, a really good fertilizing will keep everything going. Potting soils that we need to grow in containers with, they're a little bit looser than dirt because we need that extra drainage in a container. But they also don't have all of the natural nutrition that dirt would have. But dirt just doesn't work well in a container. So we do have to feed them fairly regularly to encourage that new flush of growth and all of those new blooms and keep that nice deep green color to the foliage. Like I was saying, hanging baskets, I would, try to go more like once a week just because we water through them a lot more even than in our containers. But the more regularly we can fertilize that stuff in those containers, the better it'll work. And if we have some larger containers, I also like when I plant them, I will use, we have a Carl Pool, it's a slow release fertilizer, and has quite a few of the minerals with it as well. But I'll incorporate some of that into my soil when I'm planting too. That way I always have a little bit of baseline of some fertility. And, sometimes we get, and I would be happy if this happened, but sometimes we get big dumping rains and it really soaks and flushes through the pot. And before it needs watered again, it might even get another rain. And so now it's been quite a while that we haven't even had to water it. Well, a lot of that fertilizer that we've been adding is used up or gone. And so having a little bit of those slow release that lasts, several months, but only put out a small amount will keep your plants from getting that overwatered, yellowy look to them when some of those things happen. So it isn't necessarily we just have one way to do it, but it is really important that we keep that fertility up in our containers.
All right, before we go, let's remind folks about the sale you have going on this weekend.
Yeah, running all through this week, through next weekend, we have the full flat flowering annual sale, six packs, 36 plants. You can mix and match how you want, $17.99. Some great choices in all of that. And then next Thursday, party on the patio out at Pleasant View. You can come check out the glow-in-the-dark petunia and see what all else we have going on.
Sounds like a fun time. All right, Jason, a lot of great info again this week. We'll talk to you next Saturday.
Sounds good. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And thank you for listening this morning to the Stutzman's Home and Garden Show. We hope you could join us again next Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. Have a great weekend.